Good morning. I want to welcome everyone here today. It's good to be back in the presence of other believers today. I don't know how you all find it. My life seems like it goes in cycles. And I wish it wouldn't be that way sometimes. I wish that I could find a good place to be and then just keep it there. But it seems like it goes in cycles. Sometimes I feel close to God, and other times I don't. God feels far away. Sometimes spiritually I feel full, and other times very empty. Emotionally upbeat and positive and happy, and other times discouraged and sad. So the message today is speaking to needs that I have in my own life. And my desire is that it could stimulate our thoughts toward God and encourage us to grow in maturity and holiness. I'm speaking mostly to myself today. But I think that we all face some of these things. And if you would turn in your Bibles to Isaiah 6. Isaiah was a man that had a long life of service. He's considered by some to be, and probably was, the greatest prophet that Israel had in that time, not to diminish the others. But Isaiah had probably one of the longest time spans that covered in his ministry there, covered three or four kings. And I couldn't find this personally. And I have a works of Josephus, but someone was saying that in there it talks about Isaiah, according to Jewish history anyway, met his end at the hand of Manasseh, when Manasseh was doing his slaughter of the prophets. And according to Jewish history, he was sawn asunder, which is a terrible way to go. And at Hebrews 11:37, I believe, references that when it says there were some of the prophets that were sawn asunder and wandered in sheepskins and goatskins. It was listing them there. Manasseh did have a two-part. He started his kingdom very wickedly, and then he was carried off to Babylon and released back again. And when he came back, then he was a different person. But before he went, if some people feel like Isaiah met his end under Manasseh there. But Isaiah, starting his life, he was a man that lived there in Jerusalem. He knew some of these kings personally. I don't know if he was a relative of them or not exactly, but he knew them, some of them personally. He lived there in Jerusalem. He was involved in this, in the daily life and in the culture very much. But this chapter here, Isaiah 6, 1 through 12, is his consecration or his commissioning there. Well, let's read Isaiah 6, verse 1. It says, "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims. Each one had six wings. With twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." Can you imagine this? These seraphims are flying around here, and they're crying back and forth, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, "Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, For mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar. And he laid it upon my mouth, and said, Lo, this hath touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged. Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? And then said I, Here am I, send me. And he said, Go, and tell this people, Hear ye indeed, but understand not, and see ye indeed, but perceive not. Make the heart of this people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and convert, and be healed. Then said I, Lord, how long? And he answered, Until the cities be wasted without inhabitant, and the houses without man, and the land be utterly desolate. And the Lord have removed men far away, and there be a great forsaking in the midst of the land. For a title here for Dwayne here, I have titled it, A Life Yielded to God. So this is a story of Isaiah's encounter with God. It's a vision that he had. His encounter started with a vision of God and his holiness. It went into a sense, after the vision of God and his holiness, he sensed his own uncleanness, his smallness, and his unworthiness. He then experienced a cleansing from uncleanness and iniquity. He had a willingness to serve and to leave everything. I don't know if he had a comfortable life, but he at least didn't stand out like he wasn't a target as such yet. But when he surrendered his life to God, he gave a wholesale surrender to God. And that started a life of service. It was approximately 64 years, I believe, of service there. And it went through good times and bad, some tremendously bad times in Israel and some really good ones. But that surrender is what started Isaiah on the path of service there. And I ask the question here, have we encountered the Lord? Do we have a vision of God and his holiness? Do we see God as holy? Do we see him as righteous and pure and sinless? Are we able to see God as being trustworthy? And that he will do what he says? Do we see God as just? And do we believe that he's faithful? And these are some things that Isaiah saw. He saw God as holy. He saw God for who he was. And it gave him a sense of his own uncleanness and his own smallness. Do I sense that in my own life, my own uncleanness and my own smallness, my own unworthiness? So when I feel like when I feel close to God, I want to keep it that way. But I'm human, and in my heart, if there aren't any trials for a while, then I start to get a sense of self-confidence. And self-confidence is a dangerous place to be for me, because it's not long until something comes along and knocks me flat. And, you know, when we're knocked flat, it's not a fun place to be. But a lot of times through that time is when we experience growth. So when I look at my own heart, what do I see in there? And it's not pretty. But if I look at my own heart, a lot of times there's pride in there. As much as I want to not have it there, there's pride. You know, I want others to think well of me. I do. I think we all do. But we want others to think well of us. We want to put ourselves in the best light that we can when we see. I want me to be honored. And you want others to think well of me. I want others to, I want to be, you know, be thought well of. I want to be recognized and take credit for accomplishments and for things that I've done. That's all pride. That's pride that's in my heart there. And I know there's a sense of ego that we naturally want that. But it comes from pride. Another thing that's in my heart is selfishness. I want the best for myself. I give priority to what makes me happy. I'll give credit to others after I've been taken good care of. That's selfishness. And selfishness is in my heart. Another thing that's in my heart is hypocrisy. And hypocrisy, we think of scribes and Pharisees when we think of hypocrisy most of the time. But hypocrisy is in my heart. I put on a good front to make others think I'm good, when inside I'm hiding sin. Or at times, and sometimes it can be that way. But I have had hypocrisy in my heart. And you put a front on to make others think I'm good when inside I'm hiding sin. Or I give the impression of living victoriously in public, but in private, I hardly even put up a struggle when temptation comes. But I give the impression of looking good. That's hypocrisy. And that's in my heart. Then there's judgment. I always know, quotes, I know what others' unspoken or hidden motives are for acting or speaking the way they do. I just know it. They didn't tell me that, I just know it. I have a judging, there's judgment in my heart. And sometimes that judgment will cause me to say things based on my judgment that is not true about somebody. And that's sin, but that's in my heart. Jeremiah 17:9 says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" You know, these things are something that we all struggle with, that we all find this sometimes in our hearts. I do. I find this in my heart. And Psalm 66:18 says, "If I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me." So our prayers are hindered if there is sin in my heart. Another thing, is there baggage in my life that has never been taken care of? Am I carrying bitterness or anger towards my parents for raising me the way they did? Or treating me like they did while I lived at home? Those are things that those are questions we can ask ourselves. Am I carrying baggage? Am I nursing a grudge against someone who I perceive or who I think did me wrong? Does that grudge fester in my heart and does it grow? And do I build a case against them in my heart or in my mind? And does pride enter in there? And I end up always coming out on top. When I argue against myself, I always put myself in the best light, and they're always wrong. But do I nurse that grudge? And that's baggage that comes with, that can be part of in my heart. Is there someone who I can't stand? Someone who I would love to remove from my life? And that can, we can get to that point if we nurse a grudge long enough. We can, certain people can tend to become bad enough in our mind that we would just love to never see them again. Is that right? No, it's not, but that's in our heart sometimes, in my heart. And do I sense my own uncleanness, smallness, and unworthiness before God? Have I encountered God? Have I seen His holiness? If I look in my heart and I see this, I sense an uncleanness in my heart. And I'm small if I see myself in the right perspective. I am small and unworthy. Will I allow God's cleansing power to work in my life? You know, sometimes when we sense our unworthiness and our smallness, but we enjoy being in charge of our life. And we don't want to give it up. And so we do not let God's power work in our life. Or I don't let God's power work in my life. I don't let that cleansing power work in my life. I too much enjoy at least worrying about problems and thinking I may have them in control when I don't. But I don't want to give it over to God. Am I willing to acknowledge my sin, to recognize I have a problem? Am I willing to confess it and repent? Am I willing to be broken before God? Am I willing to totally give up my life for God? Am I willing to commit my life to Him like Isaiah did? That's surrender. Surrender is being willing to sell out for God and serve Him. Am I willing to do that? Am I willing to sell out for God? And that's not a figurative statement. It is, but it's also literal, because total surrender is giving up everything. Sometimes it's harder to give up our will than it is to give up our things. And sometimes I've been to a place I'm willing to give up my things, but not my will. Or I'm willing to give up my will, but not my things. But total surrender is all of it. It's giving it all up. And Isaiah had to do that. He had to give up all, everything for that. When Isaiah, in his life of service there, he had to say some difficult things to powerful people. And that can make a strong man tremble. And without surrender, how is he going to do it? How am I going to do that? How am I going to be able to be a servant of God without surrendering my life and my things? Am I willing to sell out for God and serve Him? You know, that was the rich young ruler's problem. When Jesus asked him to sell what he had and follow Him, Jesus was asking him to give up his things. He was asking him to give up his life style, his life as in lifestyle, and come follow Him. And the rich young ruler is like me. He thinks about how comfortable it is where he's at. And he thinks about how hard he's worked for what he has. And he thinks about what his friends are going to think of him if he puts an auction up and sells everything. And what a sense of loss that will be when he no longer has his bank account. And he thinks about how he might have to sleep outside for most of the year and not have the comfort of knowing where his house is. And the rich young ruler thinks about all this, and he also thinks about the lack of control that he'll have over his life. And for somebody that has been used to making all the decisions and knowing where he's at and where he's going, that's a scary thought. To give it up and to not know, not have that control. And so the rich young ruler couldn't make that decision. He went away sorrowful because he put more priority and more of a value on keeping his life just like it was than in total surrender. But you know what? We look at the rich young ruler and we say, well, why didn't he do it? But I probably wouldn't have done it any different. I would have looked at that. I would have looked at Jesus here. He has no house. He has no nothing. And I thought, well, I'm comfortable where I'm at. I have my house. I have my life over here. And if I would have been in the exact same shoes, I would have probably done it the same way. And that's a challenge to me. I never thought of it that way before. But it's what's in my heart? How much am I willing to give up for a relationship with God? If I'm surrendered, will it matter if somebody else takes my things? If I've given them up to God, will it matter if somebody else takes it? If I have given my will over to God, will it matter what somebody else says about me? If I have given my heart over to God, does it matter if somebody else takes the credit for the things that I've done? Or does it matter if somebody else has more than I do? You know, sometimes we look at peer pressure, or we tend to look at peer pressure as a young person thing, as a youth thing. You know, they're the ones that struggle with peer pressure. But no, peer pressure is something that everybody has, from my 2-year-old or 3-year-old all the way up to, I mean, I don't know where that stops, if it ever does. But everybody is, as long as there's people around, there's peer pressure. But if I'm surrendered, does it really matter if everybody else is doing it, or if the status quo says this, or if it's nice to go against the status quo? Sometimes that can be a peer pressure thing too. Am I willing to give up my life and my lifestyle for God, like Isaiah did? Am I willing to? These are questions for me. So, one thing that in my life, if I have, you start to get a little self-confident, if things are going well, and studying is hard for me, and so it's always easier to read a storybook, something that's easy reading, than it is to read something that's hard reading. I don't know how it is for you, but I love to read, but I love to read things that don't make my mind work too hard. Some people argue that that may make your mind get better, and it probably does, but it doesn't. Some stories don't do much for your spiritual growth. And if you have a diet, if I have a steady diet of just stories of questionable value, it doesn't, it makes my relationship with God cool off. And it's a struggle sometimes, honestly, to keep that in focus. But if I'm surrendered, I can give up my stories, my life. If it is a detriment to my spiritual life, I need to give it up. But if it's not really a detriment, and there's a choice between studying for a message or studying for a topic or studying for personal growth, that is something that I can give up if I am surrendered. Am I willing to live my life in service to the King and voluntarily subject myself to what He wants for my life? Am I willing to do that? So some questions to think about. So how is my life this morning? If we look in our hearts, if I look in my heart, am I who I say that I am? I call myself a Christian, but do people see Christ when they look at me, or do they see me? A Christian is somebody that reflects the characteristics of Christ. And a hypocrite is somebody who says they're a Christian, but inwardly is not. And I don't want to be I don't want to have hypocrisy in my heart. But where am I at with God? Does my relationship with God fluctuate? Yes, mine does sometimes. Do I sometimes feel close to God and other times feel He's far away? What's the condition of my heart? Are there ugly things in my heart that I'm aware of? And if there is a problem there, what will I do about it? In Jeremiah 17:7, this is speaking, I'm going to use it in the context of somebody who has surrendered their life. And surrender is going to take it's an ongoing surrender, because if we do it one time, you gradually, as long as we're in the flesh, our flesh will gradually take back control if we do nothing more. So it takes an ongoing surrender to be current. But Jeremiah 17:7 says, "Blessed is the man that trusteth in the Lord, and whose hope the Lord is. For he shall be as a tree planted by the waters, and that spreadeth out her roots by the river, and shall not see when heat cometh, but her leaf shall be green, and shall not be careful in the year of drought, neither shall cease from yielding her fruit." And then it says, "For the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. I, the Lord, search the heart," in verse 10, "I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. I, the Lord, search the heart." And then, what are we going to be? Are we going to be surrendered? Am I willing to surrender, totally surrender, my will and my things? Am I willing to have God cleanse my heart? Am I willing to live in subjection to the King? Do I see God as holy? And do I see myself as subject to Him? In 1 Peter it says, "Be ye holy." I think it's 1 Peter. It says, "Be ye holy, for I am holy." That's an Old Testament quotation there. Be holy like God, for I am holy. But I'd like to close here with a verse in Romans 12:1. We all know this verse. Romans 12, 1 and 2, it says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. I'd like to leave a challenge to each one of us to examine our hearts and be willing to surrender them to God and be willing to take the ugly things that we find there and give them to God and be willing to take the good things that we think we have, our talents, our abilities, and give them to God and live for Him, so that it cannot be said of us like it was of the rich young ruler, it was too much. Let's kneel for prayer.